Anyway, should we do another episode?
Yes, let's. Oh, I have to do this one. Oh, no. No.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Thing. Of Supergirl. Of Deep Space Nine. Listen to The Prophets, Deep Space Nine. Not listen to The Prophets, Supergirl. Listen to The Prophets, The Thing. And that will be explained later as we go. I am always, or am I, Dr. Bill Robinson. And with me could be, if they're not changelings, is Andy Leyland.
I am very definitely a changeling.
And changeling... Oh, we have Thing 1 and Thing 2. Thing 2.
Paul, you act as if you're surprised that it's me.
Thing 1 and Thing 2. Or Changeling 1 and Changeling 2.
There's a title for the episode. Changeling 1 and Changeling 2.
Very good.
Oh, how you guys doing? It's been a long, long time since we last
recorded. It's been a long time since we last recorded.
And now we're singing the Enterprise theme. Oh, wait. No, sorry.
Even though we're doing Deep Space Nine, we'll sing Enterprise.
Well, because it's such a memorable, lovable song that you just want to relive it as much as you possibly can.
Indeed. I got changelings of the heart. No one... Don't know who's who or who, so I'm all gonna shoot you. Shoot you, shoot you, shoot you.
Shoot him!
Kill us both, Spock!
Shoot him now.
You wanna shoot me now or wait till you get home?
No, you can wait till we get home.
Yeah. Wait till your father gets. Until your father gets
whipped. I loved that show for the very short time it was on.
I did too. Tom Bosley.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was a short run, though.
Mr. C.
Yeah. I liked Wait Till Your Father Gets
Home. Mr. Pre-C.
Pre-C, yes.
Oh, so. Do we have any new Star Trek news? Has anything happened in the last
20 minutes?
20 minutes since we recorded.
Absolutely nothing of note.
Although I did get a new update on the Spaceball League.
In 20 minutes?
In 20 minutes, yes. Well, you
do
know,
tell, what has happened?
So some of you fantasy Spaceball League people are going to really be intrigued by this one. Okay, apparently there's a new team or a new league that's cropping up on the Earth. It's called the Earth Eugenics League. And I'm just going to leave that right there. So who knows if we'll have the Noonian Sings.
You are the superior bowl player.
This is SETI Alpha Base. Oh, sorry.
We are the home team.
Empire Kirk didn't call the out. That's all we have for the Space Baseball League. And I think that might be a while. We don't want to run a bit into the ground like we do on other shows.
Surely we're coming to the end of the season soon, so we can revisit them again next week. And it must be time for the transfer window, or transporter window.
So... having redisposed of the bit, we move back onto the show. And our episode for today, this afternoon, this evening, this morning, whenever you're listening, is The Adversary, which is the, what episode number is this? The 72nd episode.
Episode 26 of season 3. The season finale.
The big finito.
Season finale, big time.
Yes, we are finally going to reach season 4 again, so to speak.
And we'll discuss that at the end a little bit.
Yes, and this original air date was on around June 19th, 1995. I'll pause here so you can put in the obligatory stuff.
What stuff?
The stuff, you know, the stuff.
I got no stuff.
With Don LaFontaine, Deep Space Nine, blah, 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 blah.
That's not stuff.
You know, that's the stuff, the promo, the teaser, the TV stuff.
The hook.
Next time on the season finale of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, that's that stuff, yeah.
The hoof.
It's a shame. And now, knowing you, Paul, you've left all this in, and everybody's going, get on with the stuff!
I know not of this stuff of which you speak.
An enemy.
I want that changeling found.
So powerful.
The weapons array is activated. The ship's no longer under our control.
So elusive.
Could look like anything.
So devious.
Dominion is hoping to start a war.
When the battle is over.
Initiate auto-destruct sequence.
The war has just begun.
Don't you see? You've lost.
On the next Star Trek, Deep Space Nine.
The Adversary. In a ceremony in the station's wardroom, Jake Sisko pins a new pip on the collar of his father. That must have really hurt Pip. Ow! Oh, no.
I saw him on The Twilight Zone with Jack Klugman.
Yeah, and was he not also the little dragon that helps out Adam Warlock?
Yes, Pip the Troll.
Oh, yeah, Pip the Troll. Yes, yes. Anyway, so yeah, they pin Pip the Troll on Sisko's collar.
And now I've got this vision of him just walking around the entire episode with Pip the Troll sat on his shoulder smoking a cigar.
But only Sisko could see him.
That quantum leap.
Maybe he's still got the Joran symbiote in him. You don't see Pip. Say something, Pip. Ah, piss off. Anyway, Jake Sisko pins a new Pip on the collar of his father's.
And pinning it on, some blood was filled, and so it was planned, he command. Deep Space Nine.
I'm sorry, Bill. Nobody interrupts my synopsis. I do apologize.
Oh, that's okay. I interrupt my own synopsis and just create my own. So, just so we can get past this, puts a thingy on the collar of his father's, Commander Benjamin Sisko's uniform, making his promotion to the rank of captain. Visiting Ambassador Krasinski. Look at that. I said that right. Then tells Sisko that the Zenkethi, hey, two for two, an alien race whose nobody has ever heard about, with a history of hostility towards the Federation, have unseated their ruler, the, Autark? Yeah, Autark.
Utarski.
Yeah, I presume it's supposed to be a derivation of autocracy, yeah?
Oh, so, the Autark, yes. The Autark. In a coup d'etat. Sisko, a veteran of the non-existent Federation Zenkethi conflicts, opines that the Autark will not be missed. Autark makes it sound like some type of steak or bull or some type of meat you would eat. Autark. I'll take the Autark rare, please.
Yeah, you would eat.
And while Krasinski concurs, he warns that the Autark's replacement might renew anti-Federation hostilities. Jeez. He says Sisko is ordered to bring the Defiant on a saber-rattling mission along the Zenkethi border. Along the way, oddities occur on the ship, and the crew suspects there may be a changeling infiltrator. It is revealed to be Krasinski. But it's too late. He has already sabotaged the ship to the point it could instigate a war. After hours of searching, the crew tries to find the infiltrator with blood screenings, which were snagged from other shows this week, like Supergirl and movies like the... Oh, anyway. But are unsuccessful. Sisko readies the ship's self-destruct, which, you know, if I was a changeling, that would have been the first damn thing I had disabled. But anyway, ship self-destruct while Chief O'Brien tries to override the changeling systems. Constable Odo, ooh, big plot hole there, I'll explain when we get done, dear listener, fights the changeling in main engineering and ends up killing him, becoming the first changeling to harm another. Changeling, no, kill changeling. Oh. It is then revealed that the real ambassador, Krasinski, was kidnapped and or possibly killed and replaced by its changeling counterpart. The report of a Zenkethi coup was false, and the entire affair was a Dominion plot to destabilize the Alpha Quadrant. Back at Deep Space Nine, Odo reveals a cryptic message the changeling said before he died. You are too late. We are everywhere. And please pick up my dry cleaning.
We are everywhere. Everywhere. We are everywhere. Does anybody remember what that's from? Anybody get that reference?
No, I was thinking we are farmers. You know, we are everywhere. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
Nah,
we are changelings.
I'm going a little obscure here. The old cloaky cartoon of Davy and Goliath. And Davy was on a train. And I guess he got stuck in a car. He smelled something and went into like a refrigerator car to get some food or something. And the door closed and the train pulled off. So as the train is going along the tracks... So you hear, you know, that repetitive sound of it going along the tracks. And, you know, that was always a religious cartoon of sorts.
Uh-huh. Well, that was like a claymation thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he comes, you know, he eventually realizes that God is everywhere. And you actually hear that in the background. God is everywhere, everywhere, everywhere. God is everywhere. So... He's one of my childhood trauma of watching that cartoon reasserting itself.
I like Davy Goliath with the dog.
What you doing, Davy? Your dad won't like this, Davy.
Shut up, you're just a dog. You shouldn't be talking to me.
If you've seen, there was I do have Davy and Goliath bobbleheads in my curio cabinet.
Oh, I think I missed those.
You successfully avoided those.
Oh, I would have definitely gone, what you doing, Davy? Okay.
Were those cartoons prevalent in Across the Sea?
Not that I know of.
You're not
it's
familiar
just
with
like
them?
Gumby.
You know,
you've never seen Gumby?
Nope.
You don't know Gumby?
Damn. The I know is the Gumby from Monty Python.
No,
hurts!
No,
I know the Gumby you speak of, but not that Gumby.
Gumby,
yeah. Gumby and Pokey?
The Pokey cartoon of Gumby. He was a green... green amorphous blob of sorts, hung out with a little pony named Pokey.
Pokey, yeah. Did you ever watch SNL in the 80s? Eddie Murphy would do Gumby. He'd come on and he'd
Gumby,
be in the green
damn
suit. I'm Gumby, damn it. And
Saturday Night Live never got shown over here.
That's true. Well, we went through that about how you didn't know Second City TV either.
Yeah.
And Joe Piscopo would play Pokey.
Sid.
Joe Piscopo to me is that guy from The Next Generation.
Oh, there's so much more to Joe Piscopo.
I should hope so, because he was shit in that episode.
I was just going to say, that's one of his
Yeah, that was
things.
Terrible. Yeah. I mean, his Frank Sinatra impersonations with him and you are black and I am white. Him singing with Eddie Murphy doing... You can see we're so concerned about this because we're already just completely... There's people out there that are going, well, this is supposed to be a Deep Space Nine show. What are you guys doing? Detangling. Sorry. All right, let's bring it back. Okay, why the hell was Odo on that ship?
That is an excellent question. And I would like to say that I have an answer for you, but I don't, other than he was necessary for the plot.
Right, because there's no reason for the station security chief to go on the Defiant to the Zenkethi border. I could see if they were going through the wormhole, you could explain it that way.
Yep.
But there's no reason for it. I mean, that he's only there to further the plot, to kill the changeling at the end. That's it. I'm like, he shouldn't be there.
if that's the plot hole you alluded to earlier, yeah, I remember thinking more than once, why is Odo going with them? And it was only when we got to the end of the episode, I was like, oh, right, that's why Odo's gone with them.
Yeah. It's like, why is he suddenly the communications officer?
Yeah, this is a Starfleet mission given by a Starfleet ambassador to Starfleet personnel. Starfleet has their own security.
And
there's absolutely no reason for Odo to be even involved in this mission.
There could be no reason, because there are no reason. What reason do you need to die?
Tell me why I don't like changelings. Tell me why I don't like changelings. Tell me why.
When did I lose control? What have I created?
Did Paul become the loose cannon and you become the serious one?
I created a monster.
I think that'll be a fun role reversal if you start becoming the guy who's trying to wrangle us and I just become the one who's singing it at the drop of a hat.
What is this?
No, you're absolutely right. Odo has no reason to be on this mission.
You're not Paul, you're a changeling.
Yeah, there you go. Right, the reason for that is probably that this gets quite a number of pages in the Star Trek companion, Deep Space Nine companion, where they talk about that the original idea for this episode was to be a two-part cliffhanging finale, a very political two-part story involving the changelings and the shapeshifters. And at the last minute, Paramount, for whatever reason, said they didn't want a cliffhanger this year. So a week before filming, they had to come up with an entirely new script. So that would explain perhaps why this one does have such an incredible plot inconsistency at its heart, because they did want to explore the changelings, they wanted to explore this whole idea of changelings have never killed another changeling, and they wanted to explore what that would mean if Odo had to or did. But as a byproduct of what he was doing. So that does require them shoehorning him into this episode, and he doesn't need to. Then my other problem with this one, in addition to Supergirl ripping it off beat for beat in a very recent episode, is that Jadzia is just taken out in the middle of it for no reason.
Because there are no reasons for it.
Tell me why I don't like change.
All right.
And you know what's dumb about Jadzia being taken out? Just to go with that thought for a moment is, wow, they took out Jadzia. That was a great move, because now O'Brien doesn't have her to help him. Well, why don't you just take out O'Brien then?
That's exactly the thought I had. O'Brien's the chief engineer. O'Brien has sorted out any number of problems with Terret Noir on his own.
He took out his assistant.
The person who just helps him. The person who he says, pass me the hydro spanner to. That's the person we take out.
Well, was there some reason? Was there maybe some...
Because there are no reasons.
Tell me why.
Oh, I can't help it. I'm off the rails. I'm sorry.
Thing wanted thing two. There you go. I'm the cat. I'm the fat in the hat.
You know, there's a certain number of listeners who are saying, oh, this is funny, I'm getting a kick out of this, and there's a certain number of listeners who are saying, I'm just shutting off my iPod, this sucks.
Enough.
No, let's be a little bit fairer to it. As an episode in and of itself, it's a nice little bottle show. It's a nice little exciting, the brakes have been cut on the car, we're careening down a hill. You know, that happened in any number of cop shows in the 70s, how do we stop it? Basically, there's a nice little ticking clock on that they have to get to the MacGuffin planet before the Defiant wipes them out. There's that whole interesting idea that the changelings are now everywhere.
Changelings are everywhere.
And it conquers its problems by being very fast-paced and very enjoyable. But at the heart of it, there is still that issue that, well, you took Jadzia along just to knock her out for half the episode, and you took Odo along just so the plot would work. And it never quite overcomes those obstacles for me. It's quite a disappointing season finale when you look at other Deep Space Nine season enders.
Well, I've got another plot hole.
Go on.
So, Odo picks up the changeling in the big finale towards the end when they're fighting in engineering, and whatever, the force field's been removed from the warp core, And Odo and the Changeling are basically meshed together, somewhat linked, the way they're doing the Changeling fighting, where they're, you know, they're blobbed to each other with using the CGI. And Odo picks up the other Changeling and throws him on top of the warp core.
Like Darth Vader and the Emperor.
Yeah, but wasn't he still... See, this is where I'd have to go back and look, because I didn't think about this until now. Wasn't he still kind of attached to him, and wouldn't Odo have soaked up some of that radiation too, or maybe he let go at the last... I'd have to watch it again.
What would he have soaked up?
Radiation. Thank you for catching me on that. But because then the Changeling turns into Freddy Krueger and then turns into a big pile of ash, and not the good ash from Ash versus Evil Dead, but just a big pile of ash. When he whispers his little sweet nothings into Odo's ear.
I hadn't caught that particular question, whether or not they were still linked somehow. And I guess I'd have to rewatch it to see that. That had not occurred to me at all. But I guess, you know, you could kind of just explain it away saying, well, they disconnected.
He pulled away at the last second.
Yeah, something along those lines.
But he takes him, holds him, he lifts him, and I swear he holds him onto it and then lets him go. But I could be wrong. I might have to go back and read.
Let it go.
No.
And there is some good stuff in it. Eddington's really good in this episode.
Oh, yeah. If you have future knowledge, Eddington's really creepy.
Yeah, but I don't think at this point he's being played to be creepy. I think
I'm saying if you know where things go. That sounds like a rhyme. Oh.
Yes. It's only with the future knowledge. In this one, he's playing it very much that he's an officer who is never going to realize the ambitions that he once had, but he's kind of fine with that.
Yes, because, well, I'm here to protect the ambassador. Obviously, you didn't do a very good job.
Yeah, but the ambassador that arrived on the station was already a changeling. Do we ever find out what happened to the real ambassador?
No, I don't think we do.
Right, because we say he was on his way to Risa for a vacation and he disappeared. So the implication is that the changeling killed him. And he does hurt people, or possibly kill people, as he's wandering around the ship. But he lets Jadzia and Bashir live
when he takes up their
force. Yeah. So there's another one where they're only alive because they're cast members. Mm. And that kind of, it's all of that that hurts this.
But they needed this. He needed them alive so he could draw them. Wait, no, that was Supergirl. Never mind. Sorry.
And the bit at the end where the door just happens to open at the right time. Bashir to say, help, let me out, in one of Alexander Siddig's truly awful performances. This is high up now. Oh, help me. And the other changeling, Bashir, stood right at the side of him. And the entire crew just freeze and go, wait, how come there are two of them? What could possibly be going on? None of them react instantly.
And then as the changeling zips up into the thing again, then Sisko burns the wall with the phaser. Zip! Oh, I missed him. Like, you should have blasted him as soon as the door opened.
And it's like, it makes them out to be quite inept officers. And
you're
I don't buy...
No, you're changeless.
...is an inept officer. I don't buy that for a second. So there's too many little bits in this one that make you go, while you're watching it, that hide the fact that it is a blatant rip-off of The Thing. But I can kind of live with that when they've only got a week to knock out a script. And it is well written and tense, and some of the performances. I mean, there's a brilliantly funny scene in the middle where self-destructs in 7 minutes, and Sisko says to O'Brien, how long have we got? And then the computer says, destruct in 7 minutes. And Bashir says, O'Brien says something like, about 7 minutes?
Yeah.
That's a funny line. So the character moments and the acting's all really good in this one. It's just too full of plot holes that I think wouldn't have happened if this had got to go through the script editing process. But I'm willing to bet because they only had a week to write it, they did one, maybe two drafts, and then they had to say it's got to go before the camera.
Yeah, I'll cut it some slack for that.
No, you know what? I'm not willing to.
Well,
cut
I'm not saying it's going to change my rating. I'm just saying I'll maybe cut it a little slack. you know, I won't be maybe quite so hard, but it's still not going to change my rating.
I think the episode, you know, it has to stand or fall alone, no matter what the circumstances that they filmed it under were. You know, it's not like, oh, well, you know, like you said, your rating isn't going to change. You're not going to say, well, I would have given it a, you know, 2, but I'm going to give it a 3 because I know that they rushed. Too bad if you rushed. I don't care. I don't care if you took months to make it. If it was shit, it's still shit. You know, I mean, so whatever the case may be, I thought this was pretty entertaining, actually. I'm going to kind of go against you a little bit on that because, yes,
I didn't say it wasn't entertaining. It wasn't entertaining. It's just
I was thoroughly entertained by it, yeah.
Okay, because every plot hole you mentioned is reality, but none of them bothered me and none of them affected my ability to watch this. I really liked the thing from another world aspect of it. I thought it was kind of fun.
Oh, nobody will see me change this blood sample.
That was cool.
That was come cool. On. Anybody... Everybody should be looking at that blood vial. You couldn't see him do that quick sleight of hand?
The funny thing was, like, this, just the way he was... The way he was taking the blood, he was like, you know, I'm going to do this as if I'm in the middle of the movie The Thing from Another World, and I'm going to go especially slow in everything I do. You know, I mean, it was really just ridiculous, kind of. Also, shouldn't... If they seriously suspected that one of the command crew was the changeling in disguise...
Changeling in disguise.
Okay, you beat me to that one. Thank you.
Because
I was going to say, should I break into 2D in disguise right now? But if they really suspected that, shouldn't they have, like, erected a force field or something around them before they did the blood-taking thing? Don't they know what they're dealing with? Don't they know that the changelings are especially...
I'll throw an event. Okay. Yeah.
Don't they know that they can change? You know, it was. I thought that was kind of another plot device aspect of it. And, you know, that they're smarter than that.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of this plot that relies on them reacting too slow and not being as smart as we think they are.
You were out of my sight for 2 seconds.
Well, he says that as well. He says there are 47 crew members on board, of which we only ever see the main cast and 3 red shirts. And then he says no one is to be left alone. And yet there's any number of times throughout the rest of the episode where a character will come round a corner on their own.
47 people. Take that, divide that. So wait a minute, isn't one person still going to... Unless they have a group of 3 somewhere, one guy's going to be by himself.
That's a good point as well. Yeah. So, and then they put everyone in quarters. They confine everyone to quarters. But there still seems to be an awful lot of people running around the ship. Surely confining everyone to quarters would be everyone, with the possible exception of Sisko and the security staff.
What good does confining them to quarters do unless they put a force field around every quarter at each room, because the changeling can go through the air vents?
So that would mean that every quarter on the Defiant is a brig.
Exactly.
I don't know how safe I'd feel about that. I can just lock you in your room.
Lock it in your room.
Yeah, so and the moment we're picking apart this.
It also kind of sells short the, you know, the sensors on the ship and everything, you know, what it can detect. You know, think about the court-martial episode of the original series. But, you know, okay, let's get everybody's heartbeat on the ship. Now let's narrow it down. Let's eliminate the command crew, whatever. And, you know, meanwhile, you have Bashir in a closet and you can't find him. It's just, you know...
I was a good officer. No, sorry.
It's just a little, you know, hard to accept. But, again, as I said, for me, once the episode was up and running, despite all of the... flaws, which some of which I realized and some of which you pointed out to me here, I still enjoyed it as I watched it. I still thought it was a lot of fun to watch. I got a kick again out of the whole Thing from Another World aspect of it, and you know, I'm on board for it. I'm good.
You know, I really don't like the Founder's clothes. Do you think they should wear something a little cooler instead of that
moo-moo?
That like peach moo-moo or something, whatever they're wearing. It's like you. I mean, the Jem'Hadar are so threatening and oppressive, and here comes a guy in a moo-moo.
Yeah, and which begs the question of whether the Zendrathi or Tagathi or Nagrathi or whatever the hell they were, where did they come from?
Zenkethi.
Oh, the alien race we've never heard of before.
And we'll never hear of again.
Yes.
So there's another warrior race in the Alpha Quadrant that we don't have anything to do with and don't care about, but apparently the Federation's got a long-standing antagonism with them.
Yes.
Okay. You know, since we're never going to see them again, we're here for them.
Curse.
I'm going to just, let's just see what the Memory Alpha says. Boy, there's a lot of stuff here. Let's see. History. In the mid-24th century, the Zenkethi fought a war with the United Federation of Planets, which nobody knew about. Among the starships involved, there was only a couple, was the USS Okinawa under the command of Captain Layton, who had fought against a number of Zenkethi raiders, blah, blah, blah. In late 2371, that's it? Okay, there was a war and somebody fought against them. All right. According to his name,
you sound like the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, okay. Apocryphal. Zenkethi are also referred to in the novel Articles of the Federation. They joined the Typhon Pact, which is the book series that's been going on, an alliance of non-Federation powers in the novel Singular Destiny. Several characters, blah, 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 blah. In these novels, they're described as being humanoid in shape and extremely attractive to many different races. How you doing? Because of their internal biology, which is effectively various fluid-filled sacs, they have very fluid movement. Their skin pigmentation apparently ranges across the entire visible spectrum, in addition to having a slight phosphorescent glow. Well, they can't be that hard to fight if you can find them in a dark. Bioluminescence is also common on the Zenkethi homeworld. Okay, yeah, that's all. It's not really a lot here about them. So basically, Oh, there's another thing that said they were heavily armored lizard things. So there's even different conflicting information. So nobody knows who they are. We don't know what they look like. They might glow in the dark.
So they're heavily armored lizard things that are quite attractive.
And glow in the dark.
How does that work then?
It's like a
I want to kill
like
it, but
a
it's
sexy
so,
Gorn.
But it's so good looking. We can have the.
So basically, Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That's what we'll call them. Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm good with that as well.
So I guess the Zenkethi will be taking on the Gorn in their little baseball league.
There was a brawl, and both the races are now eliminated because they're all dead.
They wiped each other out.
Well, that's because the umpire was a Packlet.
Hey,
stop. Oh no! Oh!
They're going fast.
Yeah, so I mean, I suppose the only other thing to address is I mentioned earlier on this was ripped off by Supergirl. I made the mistake of watching these both back to back. Because obviously I didn't know that Supergirl had ripped this off so much, but there's a Supergirl episode this season that has just aired as we record this episode, where they're all trapped in the DEO with a white Martian who could be any one of them. And even there's the alien, the thing scene where they have to test each other.
With a white Martian in the DEO at the station.
And but you're officially becoming the only voice of reason in the room.
That's right. As Bill mentioned earlier, there are two fake-outs in the Supergirl episode that are in this episode as well. It's beat for beat the same show.
Yeah, they do the blood test, right? They do the blood test.
Well, it's just as stupid in Supergirl, because there's a scene where they've all got the guns pointed at each other in one of those Mexican standoff things. And I'm watching it going, there's any number of ways Supergirl could defuse this situation before anyone could blink. And she just stands there. And that's similar to what we've talked about in this. Sisko just standing there when he can clearly see two O'Briens. Bashirs. And it's got exactly the same problems that this episode of Deep Space Nine had. So I wonder, is there something inherent in this plot that doesn't necessarily work if you're not making a paranoid science fiction film about an alien from another world.
I don't know. Maybe the human mind can't process the fact that it sees two people in two different locations at the same time.
I can't believe what I'm seeing.
They've seen worse and sillier things in Star Trek.
I'm just thinking about when there were two Kirks. Must have been your fondest dream, or whatever it is he says.
Yes.
And so the only other thing with this one is they keep signposting no changeling has ever hurt another throughout the entire episode. So it kind of telegraphs the ending.
Ape has never killed ape.
Yeah, ape has never killed ape. Exactly right.
Until Odo, otherwise known as Aldo, takes him out. But I agree with you. That was the Chekhov's gun thing.
And that's the most interesting part of it. Again, it's a show that benefits from what we know will come rather than the episode itself. The most interesting thing about this one, all told, is Sisko finally becoming a captain.
Is it fair to criticize Supergirl for ripping off this show when this show ripped off, you know, a science fiction movie that's been made several times?
No, I think it's entirely possible Supergirl was ripping off the same source, the Who Goes The short story or the Thing film version, either way.
The fact that
pointed out earlier that the structure of the Supergirl episode so carefully mimics this one is quite remarkable. It's not that they're both sourcing from the same well, which is let's do the thing, because lots of TV shows, particularly science fiction ones, have done the thing because it's an easy idea to do on a limited number of sets, so it's quite a cheap episode to do. But the fact that watching them back to back just reveals how very similar the scripts are structured was quite remarkable. And if it is pure coincidence, then maybe it's just screenwriting 101, that this has to happen here and this has to happen here, and that's how the story was constructed.
Alright, I can go with that. But it's, you know, I think we need to, as similar as it was to that, and as much as it's worth commenting on that, I think ultimately we have to rate this episode on its own legs. As you're sitting and watching this episode, what did you think of it? You know, how entertaining was it? How silly was it? How stupid was it? How great was it? You know, whatever it may be. But I think we need to rate it based on what it does, not, you know, comparing it to a Supergirl episode that was done 20 years later. Later.
Well, maybe before we rate it, maybe we should see what Blaine says.
Blaine would interestingly say, as I waste time while I open up his email.
Oh, well, I already have it open.
Did you want to read it?
Oh, no, I don't want to take your shtick.
What? Okay. Blaine would say, "Hi, guys. We have Captain Sisko, finally. We also get a great changeling episode, showing that this war will not be won with traditional tactics. We also have something that I assume had to be planned. You can't say no changeling has ever harmed another this many times during the course of the season, unless we're going to see it for the first time, and now we have. We also have a nice Quark moment, as he bills Bashir in advance for the wine Quark chose. I also like Sisko's no-nonsense approach, refusing to play Choose the Changeling. Things are really in motion. Also, a quick reminder to those who have forgotten, the season 4 premiere is double length, so plan your time accordingly. Blaine." Well, I mean, Blaine obviously was high on this. I'm just trying to think. The war will not be won with traditional tactics, and I think that's where we kind of go afield from the Thing from Another World.
Yeah.
Because the Thing from Another World is exactly what it is. By having the ending that they have with, you know, you're too late, we're already everywhere. Now we're turning it from the Thing from Another World to Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's essentially the, you know, the cliffhanger. And I do like that. I do see this right now where you're thinking, this is a war they can't win. And you know, it's always good to have overwhelming odds against your heroes to create drama.
Mm. Andy will address that in a future episode, won't it? That very thing that you just said will be addressed.
Will it?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
That Starfleet can't win, so Sisko ends up doing something to balance the power in their direction.
Balance of terror.
Mm.
Does Sisko do something, or does somebody else do something?
Sisko ultimately does it, but he's aided by a pure, simple tailor.
And we're going to have to get to that eventually, and I don't want to go too far into what happens. But I thought the pure, simple tailor kind of overstepped his bounds, and Sisko was angry at him afterwards for what he did, even though he accepted the ultimate result.
I don't remember. I do remember Sisko ultimately is involved in doing something that he's not necessarily happy with, but to shift the balance of power more in the Federation's direction.
But that's way in the future, so...
Yeah.
By the time that happens, we won't even remember we had this conversation.
Probably not, no.
All right, so anybody have any more comments on this, or do we want to rate it?
No, we can go ahead and rate it. I guess I'm the rater. I'm the first rater. Did some the synopsis in there. I think I'm going to give it. I'm probably going to surprise you. I'm going to give it 3 broken changeling ashes. 3 burnt changeling bits. So it was still an entertaining episode if I overlooked the plot holes, and I was still going to give it a 3 regardless of that we found out that actually was supposed to be a 2-parter because it was interesting. We do see we get some more development of Eddington's character. We get to see Sisko as the captain. We finally resolved the, no changeling has ever killed another changeling trope that's been going on. So, enjoyable. It was enjoyable. It passes the Paul Spataro test. If I was to go buy it, I would stop and watch for a bit. So, 3 burnt changeling bits.
And again, we're on exactly the same page. Taken on its own merits, it's a hugely entertaining episode. It's very enjoyable. There's lots of nice character moments. There's lots of good acting. It rattles along at a fair pace that you don't really have time to consider much of the plot problems as we've discussed them here. The only one that really struck me as I was watching it was, why the hell is Odo here? But other than that, yeah, it's a good episode. 3 solid. Again, yeah, it passes the Spataro flip test.
I'm going to even be the outlier on this, and I'm going to say 3.5, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. As I was watching it, the plot holes kind of were there, and I was saying to myself, if I thought about it more carefully, I'd come up with better ways of going after this changeling than they're doing, so I'm sure they could. On the other hand, somewhere in my mind, another part of my mind was shushing that voice, saying, shut up, just enjoy the episode. And that's what I did. So since I enjoyed it as much as I did, plot holes aside, I really enjoyed it, and I'm going to say 3.5 on it.
Yeah, it's one of those that works despite the plot problems. It's not one of those where the plot problems cause you to not like the episode. It's like when if you're not enjoying an episode and stuff sticks out at you anyway, that can detract from it. But this one, the plot things did stick out, but as you're watching it, you're enjoying what's going on. So you kind of let them slide a bit. And it's an enjoyable one. It's not a bad one by any means.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. It's just the final number we landed on was slightly different, and not even all that different. So what are we going to listen to next time? What prophets are we listening to next time?
Next time, our all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. It's the Double Bill Season 4 presentation of The Way of the Warrior.
Listen, battle stations, to the sound of terror, to the cry of battle.
The peace treaty between the Federation and the Klingon Empire is in.
Witness a merciless enemy, one final hope.
Lieutenant Commander Worf.
Come
on! Reporting for duty, sir.
The showdown has just begun on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yes! Worf comes to the station.
And to explain that a little further, the double bill, and it doesn't mean Bill is going to be on it twice.
What?
But anybody who's been listening to this show since its inception would know that this actually started as an offshoot of Assistant Editor's Month on Two True Freaks. Andy, myself, and Sean did an episode of Listen to the Prophets as if it had been going on and that this was the opening of the season four and that I was just joining the cast at that time. So we did an episode that I haven't listened to since then, and I'm pretty confident Andy hasn't either.
Nope.
So what we're going to do is the next time we get together, we're going to record this episode without listening to what we said in the past. But then as far as what's being presented to you, the listener, is next time around, you will get a representation of the original episode we did. And then the time after that will be followed by our new look at it. And we're going to maybe have some fun comparing our thoughts then to our thoughts now and see how different or, you know, what different observations we may make. But each of us has kind of entered into a pact not to listen to that until after we've recorded.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that'll be kind of fun, I think, I hope. And that's it until next time. So long, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, and we will get back to the Garrick novel. We were a little bit pressed for time today, so we'll be getting back to that. Never fear.
Yeah, I think our next installation, or next installment, rather, will come in our new Way of the Warrior episode. Take it easy, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
So I was talking to my boss yesterday, and I was, you know, because I put in for some vacation time. Well, he's one of my bosses, one of the project managers. And I said, yeah, I put in for some time to take in March because that's when our vacation is up for the year and I got to burn some time. I said, but I don't really care if I get that time, and if you guys will let me sell it back, that's great. But I need the time in April because I have a friend that's coming in from England. And the guy's like, from England? It's like, yeah, one of the guys that I do the podcast with, he's like, I don't really like people with English accents. I'm like, well, you like this guy because he's not that snooty London posh upbeat.
Very few of us are like that.
I think you're all like that.
Oh, okay.
And don't, I said, please, he's don't not kill that the stereotype snooty. For me.
I said, he's not that snooty type of accent. I said, he's from the north. I said, so the north is kind of like the south, because this guy that I'm talking to is kind of a redneck. I said, the north in England is kind of like the south in America. I said, so he's an English redneck. He's like, oh, south, okay.
well, thank you for that, Bill.
Well, that was the best way I could put it into terms that he would understand.
You are a Dukes of Hazzard fan.
I am, and it's a very sad state of affairs, because I have said before, if I lived in America, I would own a muscle car, I would own a gun, and I probably would go and watch NASCAR.
See? You're an English redneck.
So
you can tell Ange she needs to start walking around the house barefoot and pregnant.
No, none of that. Okay. She can wear the Daisy Dukes, that's as far as it goes.
Well, at least in Paul's and I's relationship, neither of us wear the Daisy Dukes.
Oh, I don't know. I think you'd look very fetching.
Oh, maybe retching.
Are we good? Very funny. So, did either of you two watch Supergirl last week?
No, I'm behind on my Supergirl viewing.
I don't know. Which one was last week?
You would have spotted it because it was exactly the same plot as The Adversary, with exactly the same scenes in it.
Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, wait. Yes.
The DEO gets pinned closed down because a changeling slash white man.
That's right. You're right. Yes.
Could be anybody, but we have this way of looking and proving who it is.
You are correct. Yes, it was exactly the same plot. And they even had a double fake out when someone else was actually because her sister was also first it was the geeky tech guy Wynn, and then it was the sister. Yeah.
It was Alex, yeah. I watched them back to back. I watched Supergirl with Anya, and then they all pootled off, and I went, I'll watch my Deep Space Nine now, and I'm watching it going, have I just watched this?
Did I just see this?